It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host. Joined today by County Commissioner Mark Margopoulos. Mark, good to see you, as
good to
always.
Be here. Good to see you.
Been a while, and we have a lot to talk about. I don't know if you're aware of this, but apparently Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. I don't think that happened since we last talked, but I kind of have to say that out loud periodically so that I can, you know, believe it.
I think it did happen since we last talked.
It might be. Actually, you know what? I'm just remembering. Didn't we talk after the Women's March?
Oh, yeah.
Last year.
Right, so
I think
right
you
afterwards.
And you and Penny and
yep.
I might have talked, and we had to be cautious in our language and not
yep.
mention those particular hats that were so popular then and now and
that,
always.
That was a good feeling, man.
Yeah, it really and boy, you know, another great turnout this year, our dopey president tried to send out a tweet and say, "Hey, look! Oh, great, women marching! How wonderful!" And you know, oh my goodness, yeah. Dr. Yeah. Clueless himself.
They say he doesn't drink, but sometimes I wonder.
Well, you know, if you're going to be that dopey, then why? Why bother?
Yeah.
Why bother drinking? Right?
Yeah,
I
right.
mean.
Yeah.
And I love that his at his annual physical that the Navy doctor said about him that he could only explain his great physical condition by the fact that he's, you know, he's never drank and never smoked and just great genetics. And I thought, I don't know. I don't think I'd be pointing to that. I think his father died young from alcoholism and his brother did. And
is that right?
You know, I'm not sure that I would be pointing to genetics necessarily. But anyway, so he's, you know, apparently passed a cognitive exam that means that, you know, he knows the difference between a goat and a Tyrannosaurus Rex or something.
Yeah, that was
and
impressive.
I just, you know, boy, if anybody had any doubt, that certainly laid it all out there for us, right? So, you know, you and I have had some exchanges over the Facebook. You know the Facebook mechanism, the Facebook machine. And we've been talking about tenor and tone of political dialogue and how it's kind of gone horribly wrong on the national level. Tell me about what you see in the Democratic Party, and we're talking about, you know, 30,000 feet might be too low. At the highest levels of government, about what you're seeing in national leadership for the Democratic Party, and what you think, if I'm giving you a magic wand, what would you like to do with it during this year between now and the midterms?
Well, there's a struggle going on in the Democratic Party, and it can get uncivil at times, unfortunately. I mean, a lot's on the line, but we also have, like you mentioned, this sort of just the tenor of national discussions is so rancorous right now, right? And it just filters into so many other arenas. But you know, I firmly believe that you know this 2018 election is the most crucial election in my voting lifetime.
I think that's right.
There's so much at stake, and I'm worried that the battle within the Democratic Party is not going to result in a party that does more than just opposes Trump.
Right.
Like a lot of the strategists are going, we've got a winner here. We can oppose this goofball and all these terrible policies, and people are going to vote for us, and that's all we have to do is point at him. I don't believe that.
No, I don't either.
It's certainly not a sustainable vision for political success. We, as Democrats, we are going to have to point to specific policies that are going to help people in, you know, there's more inequality in the U.S. now than there was in France before the French Revolution, right? You know, so this is...
It's true.
The ground is shifting, right? And when you... And a lot of the, you know, the sort of the old school corporate Democrats are still saying, we're not Trump. And you've got this whole new wave of younger candidates that are stepping up and saying, we want Medicaid for all. We want free college tuition.
Right.
And, you know, specific progressive policies that, that people are going to go, that will help my life.
Right.
Know?
And it is remarkable. You have an article here on the table here in the studio with a picture of Nancy Pelosi, a person who, and the name of it, the article is The Dead Enders. You know, Nancy Pelosi, at least in my judgment, was probably one of the most successful speakers of the House that we've seen in a very long time. Someone who ran the House like a well-oiled machine. And in terms of that particular accomplishment, I just think it's inarguably true. I don't think she ever brought a vote to the floor that didn't pass. I think that she negotiated effectively with the administration and across the aisle, made every effort to make deals in a very, very difficult environment while Obama was president, trying to get things passed that were reasonable, that were down the middle, that went through an open process and an accountable process. And I think that she had a lot against her, but ran an effective shop. That's a job, Speaker of the House, that should be. You're supposed to be Speaker of the whole House. And I think she was, to a large extent. I mean, she's still a Democrat. She's still a California Democrat. She's progressive. But I think that she did a way better than average job as Speaker of the House. So I'll put all that out there, and then I'll say, and if the Democrats win again in 2018 and take the House back, I don't think she should be the next Speaker of the House. I think it should be a next generation person.
So there's one recent issue that I think illuminates all this. A few weeks ago, I don't know how many folks know this, but there was a big new surveillance bill that was presented to the House and Senate. And this was going to give the president and the FBI and the executive branch immeasurable powers to spy on Americans without warrants.
Right. I was going to say, is this the renewal or a new bill of the warrantless search program, as it were?
Sort of a beefing up of the unconstitutional provisions in that bill, right? So, you know, leading up to that bill and through the Trump administration, the Democratic Party has adopted the hashtag resistance movement.
Right.
And they've been talking about resistance to Trump all the time. Adam Schiff, right? He's been at front and center. Nancy Pelosi has been front and center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was a 215-207 vote in the end that gave this, you know, they had painted a picture of this wildly lawless president who had unconstitutional desires. They gave him greater powers to spy warrantlessly on Americans. Nancy Pelosi worked hard to get that bill passed. Adam Schiff was a big supporter of that bill. When push came to shove, they had, you know, 8 votes, right? Was the difference. They were on the wrong side of that issue. And when you have a country where there are more independents than Democrats and Republicans, and you have so many young people that are among those independents who are looking for some inspiration, and they've seen this tired game play out. If we don't, as progressives, change the Democratic Party to appeal to the policies that we need to help people's lives and to protect people from a government that has, you know, really gone into unconstitutional territory, then we got problems.
And you know, you have in our favor. We have people like Trey Gowdy and others comparable to him who are retiring in anticipation of a blue wave. So the setup is right there.
Yep.
It's almost like, you know, only the Democrats could blow this. I love us.
That's
Democrats. I love us. But you know, it feels that way. You know, it feels like a lot of self-doubt. And I don't know that Paul Ryan, by the way, is even running to keep his seat in Congress. He hasn't announced.
You know, it's like
I know there's a lot of people expecting that he's going to not run to keep his seat.
You know, it's like if Al Capone had just retired before the last bank robbery, right? You know?
Right.
That's what they're doing.
That's good advice, Al. They should have taken that advice. Although, wasn't it tax evasion that got him?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, cigarette tax or something.
Right.
So they've looted the commons, and now they're going home.
You know, yeah, right. Well, know. Or they're going across the street to K Street,
yeah, right,
more likely, right?
Right?
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember so well. This is just, you know, I'm almost over this. I remember so well that when Bob Dole was running for president, he said, send me to the White House or send me home to Kansas. Well, I think you know he didn't go to the White House. He also did not go home to Kansas. He went home to the Watergate where he lives with Elizabeth Dole, who ran for Senate somehow from North Carolina where she hasn't lived for decades.
Yeah.
Because her mother lives here. She was able to run for Senate from this state because her mother lives here. And I was writing a column for the paper at the time, and I said, well, there's great news. Hey, everybody, I'm running for Senate from Connecticut because my mother still lives there. And I haven't lived there since the 70s. But okay.
So Mitt Romney's going to run from Utah, right?
Yeah, I noticed he changed his point of his
Twitter
his home
handle,
base
right?
or Twitter handle to reflect that he was now tweeting from his home in Utah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at this point, I would find him a breath of fresh air. That's how polluted the air is right now.
It's pretty sad.
We need the Clean Air Act to return to that. Well, speaking of returning, we're going to return in just a minute and talk some more with Mark Margopoulos here on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Gene Bolduc here talking with Mark Margopoulos here on the Weekend Water Cooler. And we're talking politics, and we're talking a little bit about tone and by the way, a word that I was always a fan of, I think it's still in the dictionary, truth, you know, and telling the truth. It's always irritated me when people talk about public relations people and they say, well, you know, but they lie all the time. I did some public relations work and, you know, I was pretty studious and careful and ethical about the fact that I told my employer that, listen, I'll you know, give you a plate served with you-know-what and tell you that it's chocolate pudding, but I'm not going to lie. I might tell you it's the best-tasting crap there ever was, but I'm not going to tell you it's chocolate. I'm not going to lie about it. Because really, really professional PR people, they don't lie. They might want to make it sound as good as possible, but they're not in the business usually of lying. So it's irritating to me, Mark, that the president lies about anything and everything on the most casual basis imaginable. I think the numbers I heard about the State of the Union were that there was a lie every five statements or something like that. I mean, I really don't want the job where you have to keep track of that. But my personal favorite, of course, was bragging about, again, crowd size, and about how this was the most viewed State of the Union in history. It didn't even have as many viewers as his own address last year, which technically wasn't a State of the Union. But his State of the Union was almost 20 million fewer viewers than George W. Bush's in 2003, in which George Bush lied us into the Iraq War.
What's with the lying?
I
totally believe it. I mean, who would want to put themselves through 90 minutes of Trump like that?
I know. Well, you know, it's like hitting yourself in the head with a rock. It just feels good when you stop, you know, right?
Yep.
And then you say, oh, well, you know, that's all over with. And now it's 11:30, so now I'll just go to bed and get a good night's sleep because that thumping has stopped.
So when he tells whoppers like that, I wish the press would go to everybody except the White House in the Republican Party and say—
And make them comment on it.
How are you standing by this guy?
Why are you leaping to your feet and applauding him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can you stand by this guy who is just transparently a rogue and a liar?
Right.
You know, make them answer for it because it's them.
They're the problem. If they weren't, if they weren't doing this enabling, we wouldn't be having this issue.
We need to hang Trump around their neck like a flaming tire.
Yeah. You know? Although, as you pointed out about the Democrats, now what you're talking about is what the press ought to do, and I totally agree with you about that. The Democrats need, I think, to focus on process, on fair, transparent government process. One thing I will say about Adam Schiff is that when they had this nonsense with the Nunes memo, which is probably written in crayon, by the way, and Schiff came out, you know, immediately and said, well, you know, they're voting out this memo to release it. It's full of classified material. It's cherry-picked intelligence. The country's already been damaged by this sort of thing before. You know, he just called it out for exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And then said, you know, and by the way, the Democrats have a memo that addresses these issues, and the Republican majority in the committee voted down the prospect of releasing that memo. So they want to make sure that Americans only hear one side of the story. I think that's a good point of contention, to just say, you know, don't get caught up in the particulars. Focus on that process. That's an unfair process. Reasonable people from different perspectives should agree on that.
I think that's smart insofar as it goes, but I think, you know, there's a large number of people out in the country that just think, well, that's just Washington. They just tune out, right?
Right.
They're bickering in Washington about
this
and that. And they've been doing it for years, and they're sitting there, you know, wondering what's going to happen with their health care.
That's right.
And that's
where
the Democrats should have billboards. First of all, the Democrats need to get behind Medicare for all or single payer, however you want to call it. I don't have a problem with any of those terms. But we need to join the rest of the civilized world in providing health care as a right for our citizens. There should be billboards all across the country.
It's an awfully good idea, Mark.
I don't know why billboards aren't used more often.
A lot more.
You know, you can succinctly put some nice images and a few words on a billboard that would stick with people.
And a website address that's memorable so people can go for more details when they want them.
But my major point is just issues that resonate with people who are hurting. I mean, there are people out there, obviously, a lot of these Trump voters, they are supporting Trump to be, you know, just like they support, you know, the Dallas Cowboys or something, right? They're just, you know, spite of themselves, in spite of their own needs and their life.
That's true.
They are sticking with their team.
Or some team that's worse.
And, you know, and Trump's lies all stir into their perception that everything is fake news. But if they start to see something that really affects their life, and they are, you know, we don't hear from.
Well, like
every
he's
day.
Out there saying, you know, these coal jobs are going to come back and all this nonsense. Well, no, they're not, and yet, a lot of the vote in the area where people were working in coal supported him, and I don't.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
I mean, wanted a disruptor. They, you know, that's how desperate. They are.
Well, that's right. That's right.
You know, just real quick though, there's a talk about a Democratic battle. I mean, Joe Manchin would be a Republican.
Why isn't he? This is a good question.
You know, the conventional wisdom is he's the only Democrat that can win in West Virginia because it's such a Republican state.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, no one's ever tried the alternative. But now this woman Paula Swearengin is running. She comes from West Virginia. Her grandfather and uncles died of black lung disease.
Okay.
She has total credibility when she steps up and says, West Virginia has done its part to fuel this country with coal. But those days are gone.
That's right.
And it's dangerous to keep it up. And she even tells the story of when she was a girl, she thought her hair was red. And then when she moved to North Carolina for a few years, when her father lost his job in coal, they moved to North Carolina for a while.
Okay.
And she washed her hair in water that was not from streams that were flowing past coal mines and found out she had brown hair. She's a very compelling candidate, and she's challenging Manchin.
Where can I send her $5? Because
Swearengin, just like from Deadwood.
Swearengin. Yeah. See, that's what needs to happen.
Yep. She's a young woman. She's probably 40, 35, 40.
Oh, that's fantastic.
You know, very compelling.
That's fantastic, and that's what needs to happen because I saw Joe Manchin on a couple of the Sunday shows a week or two ago, And I was just watching this him answering these questions with these tortured answers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you know, Joe, retire. This is going to kill you, man. This is just no good. You don't even know what you're saying. You don't know what's what. You know, oh, that's just, what did he say? Oh, that's just New York talk. I mean, it was some craziness that he was defending Trump for.
Right.
And I thought, you know what? I honestly just switch party affiliations, because if you're going to carry water for this guy and you're going to answer questions with that's New York talk, goodness gracious. It wasn't anything about a turn of phrase.
Yeah, there's a stench all around that guy. His daughter has made millions off the EpiPen price hike. Right, that scam,
and somehow didn't get prosecuted.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I don't get that.
Yeah,
I don't get it. You know, they had a thing when Bill Clinton was running for president, and in the stump speech that Al Gore would do as he was introducing Clinton. I went and saw them in '92 at North Carolina Central when I was a student, and he did this thing in his speech that he would come back to again and again. The call and response, he would just point to his wrist and he would say, "It's time for them to go."
Uh-huh.
and that's what Manchin time is.
Mm-hmm.
It's time for him to go.
And so
sadly, Mark, it's time for us to go to a break, but we're going to come back and we're going to talk more with Mark about with Mark Margopoulos, talking about the state legislature. So everybody get ready. We're going to talk about the General Assembly, and then we're going to talk a little bit about our beloved Orange County government, which is Mark's to run, basically. He's the czar of all of Orange County, right?
I rule the land.
You rule the land.
Not exactly.
Not quite. Not quite, but not for lack of trying. So we're going to be back with Mark with more on the Weekend Water Cooler. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. And we're back talking here with Mark Margopoulos. We're here on the water cooler, and we are, well, you know, we're moving on. We're moving on to the General Assembly in Raleigh. And, you know, the General Assembly over the years, over the last many decades, you know, has been controlled by the Democrats. And when the Republicans came into power, which was, what, 2012? Is that right? When they gained control?
I think that's right.
These years have become such a blur. Maybe it was 2014, but I think it was 2012. You know, they had been out of power for 40 years, I think, for a long time. And they subsequently have demonstrated, I think, why it is that they have been not in control of state government since then. They've been extremely disruptive to state government. At least in my opinion, the so-called bathroom bill and various and sundry episodes of trying to undo and reverse and damage protections of local and state government. And it's, you know, we're talking about how we would like for Democrats to be clear about what they're for, not just what they're against. But I, for the life of me, I don't get it. I don't get what they're for. I don't get what they think they're doing, who they think they're protecting, by trying to suppress votes, by trying to reinstate racism and discrimination and voter suppression. I just don't get it.
Well, you know, we say we're dropping from the federal level to consider the state level, but state legislatures, like especially like the Republican-dominated ones in North Carolina and so many across the country, it's part of a national strategy, right?
Yes.
You know, the Koch brothers, Heartland Institute.
That's true.
You know,
yep. Alec.
They set out this strategy, you know, many, many years ago.
Yep.
And, you know, systematically, doggedly, and determinedly have conquered, you know, political arena after political arena to the point where – you know, like for instance, the Koch brothers and the Heartland Institute, all these people, they hate renewable energy because they have invested so heavily and made so much money off fossil fuels, right?
Right, right.
So you have this ludicrous situation where the Pentagon studies the effect of wind power sites located near their bases and conclude that there's no problem.
Right.
And once we start to take advantage of the vast amount of wind power out on the coastal plain, the legislature says we can't do that because we care so deeply about the military. Right. So they're just making up stuff
right.
to serve
back
their
to that,
overlords.
Back to that truth
right?
word again. Right.
And everything they do is to serve their overlords.
Right.
Really. And the divisiveness just leads toward it's easier for them to make policy when things are so divided. And of course, the gerrymandering is, you know, when they tilt the table like that,
right.
they've accomplished a lot to achieve their goals. They care little about the air and the water and the health of North Carolinians. So it's all kind of wrapped up.
I guess they have their own air supply.
Do they think
that we're protecting the water only for Democrats?
I mean, what hubris, all these people that they think their money is going to somehow protect them from climate change and the environmental
right.
Effects of their policies. I mean, they just don't understand. I mean, at a certain point you realize it is madness. I mean, they have succumbed to a type of mental illness where they think they're invulnerable. Their money can buy them out. But I should mention real quick, you know, I didn't know about this until a year or two ago, that if you have, I think it's 2/3 of the states, if they call for a constitutional convention,
yeah.
one has to be held. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're within 3 or 4 states of that being true. And that has long been the holy grail for
right.
these people, because of course they want to take the Constitution.
There are a number of amendments that they'd like to reconsider. Everything's on the table
yep,
if they do that.
Yep,
right?
They want to run up a record number of American flags around the new Constitutional Convention and then undermine everything that America stands
absolutely
for.
Absolutely everything, right.
You know, which would be just one of the great, you know, political heists of history. So that's what we're facing is this.
Is North Carolina one of the states that is already on board in favor of that? Please tell me no.
Oh, they would.
Oh, God.
Oh, they would for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, who's holding out? I want to move to the state that's holding out.
Well, so see, electing Cooper was a nice pushback on that.
Yeah,
right?
It really was. It's interesting that
they need everything. They need all the.
Pat McCrory
parts of government
really took the bullet for all of this activity
yeah.
in the General Assembly, even though we couldn't flip the General Assembly back
yeah.
to do you think we can do that this year? She asked, hopefully, with her little halo of wishful thinking on top of her head.
Maybe is about all we can say, you know, and things can change. I mean, election season is a long season and lots of things can happen. But, you know, the thing we have going
that's
for
probably
us,
the most important thing for us to do,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yep, it is.
Even more
state,
important than the congressional
we
seats?
We've got to focus on the state and not worry too much about who's going to run for president in 2020. And
oh, I don't even.
Games, right?
I, that's the
it's
furthest
kind of
thing
it's
from
kind
my
of fun,
mind right
but,
now.
Let's hold off on that a little bit.
I mean, that's the presidential race for 2020. That's a parlor game right now. That's
yep.
just
yep.
that's just a crazy waste of time to be concerned with
yep.
that.
Yes.
I'm much more interested in the composition of the House, not just whether or not the Democrats can take it back, but who gets in. And I think, here's Gene's prediction, I think the House of Representatives is going to be an estrogen-rich environment this time next year.
Yep, I agree.
That could
I
be
agree.
A stunning turnaround.
It's sort of coming under the radar because, you know, part of... part of our antiquated view of women's rights is that we don't notice what they're doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of things are sneaking up.
It allows them to be kind of subversive.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and, you know, like, for example, yeah. Cecile Richards
uh-huh.
is stepping down from running Planned Parenthood
yeah.
after 12 years of
yep.
doing that very successfully. I'm not sure she's going home to bake cookies.
I'm certain she's not.
I'm pretty sure she's
going to
run for Congress.
And she was pretty coy about it, but you could see it coming. So
yeah,
that's all good stuff, you know. I mean,
it
so
is.
We have room for optimism, but that optimism is going to have to be backed by a lot of hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, since I've been I mean, I was aware of it before, but now that I've been a county commissioner for over a year now, it's amazing how many issues that we take up that we think about in the context of a government that opposes almost everything that we want to achieve here.
Yeah.
And the fact that they have power over a good number of those things.
A lot of it, yeah.
And it's a very awkward situation when you don't want to draw attention to some
right.
of the things that you know
right.
you should do.
Right.
Or you decide to take that risk, right?
Right.
Because they can, you know, North Carolina is not a home rule state. They
right.
have unusual powers. I like to invoke the old nanny state phrase. They are the ultimate nanny state,
yeah,
which conservatives
true.
Decry, but they love this one.
Yeah, they decry it right up until they're in charge in,
yep.
in Raleigh, and then they deploy that
yep.
constantly, it seems like.
Yep.
I mean, and we saw that in clear relief with the bathroom bill and how it affected our local ordinance, our civil rights ordinance. I mean, that was just, sorry, Republicans, for the recent accident, but that was a train wreck. I mean, that was just a terrible, that was a terrible overreach. When I think of the resources that were wasted in that exercise, it aggravates me.
So one of the positive aspects of this whole situation is they tend to run dim bulb candidates
yeah.
and don't handle the issues very well. The Democrats have not taken advantage of that
right.
like they should, because they have, you know, in this age of Citizens United,
right.
they're looking to get big campaign donations as well.
Right.
And that is distracting them sometimes from taking better positions.
Yeah. And they're not yeah. – and Democrats have not been developing talent on a 50-state approach and,
no.
and within the states, you know, in North Carolina, maybe not in a 100-county approach, saying, oh, this county is notoriously conservative,
yep.
so we're not even going to try. Well, you know what? If they're running dopey candidates again and again and again, you should be trying.
But that's happening now.
Yeah.
To be fair.
That's awake now.
You know, we're in transition, and
yes.
I may sound overly critical of the Democratic Party, but I have to say that I'm aware that there is a growing pool of talented candidates
right.
that are coming forward now.
I think that's
there is,
right.
There is
yep.
the mindset that we need to be there in every county, because we saw some other ones around the country this year where, you know, conventional wisdom said, well, Democrat will never win there.
Right.
They just put somebody up, and lo and behold, they won.
Yes.
Right? So you got to have somebody there.
Hello, Doug Jones.
You know,
yeah.
it can happen, right?
Right.
And you can't win if you don't play.
Thank you. That's exactly right. That's lottery advice, but nevertheless.
Yep. Call me a genius.
You're a genius. And we'll be back with more with genius Mark Markopoulos, a stable genius, I would point out. Here on the Weekend Water Cooler, you're listening to 97.9 The Hill. We're back for our closing moments here with Mark Markopoulos, and we're talking about politics. We've straightened out the whole country and a good part of the state, and now we're going to take our last few minutes to talk about a really, really hot local topic, which is affordable housing in general and the trailer park that's on Weaver Dairy Road specifically, which has been in the paper recently, and the county's got some options here about approving redevelopment of that property. Those trailers, as I understand it, are not in sufficient condition that they could be relocated. So tell me about that issue and how that came to the commissioners and what the decision is that's in front of you and what the county's options are to do a great thing here.
Well, we're in the process of finding out how many of them can be relocated.
Yeah, because it's a really important location too, right there.
Yes,
yeah.
So
on the bus line, and
we've had we've folks out there checking them out, and we think maybe half. We don't know for sure, but
mm-hmm.
that's easily knowable. So this issue, sort of the Hanover development proposal precipitating the removal of these, I think there's 35
right.
Trailers there, 35 families, comes at a really, really kind of a perfect time in regard to what the county's been doing on this. Like a few years ago, discussion began about what are we going to do when this happens, Right. We don't see it. We don't see it happening. You know, for sure, anytime real soon. But we know it's going to happen with all these trailer parks around. Right. So the county did surveys of all the trailer parks. Went out and took account of the trailers, the people. Actually, went in. The Family Success Alliance sent some of their navigators. Mm-hmm. Who are the navigators are the people that work directly with the folks that they're trying to help do better and help their kids do better in school and all those things. The navigators went into the trailer parks and did a lot of interviewing to find out what did they want. Would they like to move to an affordable townhome somewhere? Would they like a different living situation, even, you know, given that a lot of these trailers were, you know, kind of decrepit and all that. But one of the things that they learned was that the communities were more valuable than the shape of their home, right? Okay. They especially the Hispanic communities, really appreciated you know, with the language barrier and all the legal issues that might come into play. They really appreciated having the community. And the other part of the community is, like, you go off to work and you got some kids, you know, and – you know, the elderly neighbor might say, well, I'll take care of your kids. So there's all those community relationships come into play. All that to say, it's really important to keep in mind what the community wants when we ride in to rescue them. Yeah. So backtrack to the work that the county did preparing for this. We had this, the staff did a great job on pulling all this together into a report, and we decided in November at a meeting that we were going to endorse all these proposals to be prepared to relocate folks when things happened. And
this is a lot, by the way. It reminds me very much of what happens when public housing is raised and then and the land is redeveloped. That public housing has a whole requirement about relocating those families temporarily, giving them vouchers to relocate temporarily, and then allowing them to come back in if they qualify for the new units, whatever the construction is or the composition of how many units it is and how many can be public housing.
Yeah.
And that's because you're disrupting a community.
Right.
Even if the quality of the housing is not great, the people there make it a community.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, even HUD recognizes that.
So we got this all set up, and with some research behind it, and then we heard about this Hanover development, and we own parkland, 78 acres on Millhouse Road,
right
opposite the Chapel Hill Maintenance Building.
Yep.
People that know Millhouse Road, you're driving straight up, Maintenance Building on your right, stop sign, take a left over the railroad tracks, a right turn. There's a temporary waste facility out there now. Mayor Heminger, on behalf of the town council, had proposed a month or two ago that become a soccer park. And we're in the process of talking about that. Sounds like a great idea. But we also realize at this point that what a great location to relocate the people from just a couple miles away.
Right.
And we could do it relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, put in gravel roads. We could drill a well, put in a package sewer system. It's in the rural buffer.
Right. As
always with the rural buffer, your last resort is water and sewer because you're letting the development genie out of the bottle to impact a land use device that has served us so well. So we're seeing that this is not that complicated, that we can do that, right?
Yeah.
And it would – so we've initially thought, well, it's going to be in the same school system. It's so close, right?
Right.
We got a little minor bump in the road. The school district line goes right along Millhouse Road where you drive straight off of Eubanks, right by the railroad tracks, right?
Right.
So, you know, my joking solution was, we'll just put their mailboxes over there on the road, right? So it's that close. So we have to get the school boards involved, and we can adapt to that.
I'm
relatively sure that little
they could grandfather road the kids block in or something.
Yeah, I mean, we can't let that
that can't be the reason.
Be the game changer there. There's 100 buses parked across the street at the bus depot. You know, some people say, well, it's not on a transit line. You go, well, you know what? We can figure that out, too.
I think you could, yeah.
So we're moving on it, right?
Right.
I think it kind of caught it caught Chapel Hill by surprise.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, helping out and talking about it, but we're already out of the gate, and we're gonna carry this project forward, knowing that there might be delays, and we want to be ready. We want to help this community, and so we don't want to.
This
slow
is
down.
One of these things, Mark, about how people talk to each other, and so forth. Is that everybody that you've just described to me? Everybody's acting in good faith, and when everybody's acting in good faith, you can work it out.
Yeah.
And that's not going to tend to be producing clickbait and generating a lot of headlines, but that's what local government does.
Yep.
And so much of the time, it's about just listening to the people who are most involved and how it impacts them, which you've already done, and working it out, you know.
Yep. So there's another couple of interesting aspects to this. There's a lot of trailer parks, right? This
right.
is going to This is
in some
keep,
really interesting key locations.
Yeah, this is going to keep happening. So we're going to be meeting with Chapel Hill and we're going to form a committee with Chapel Hill and Carrboro staff, elected officials,
right.
to look ahead at what we do in
right.
the future, right?
Right.
Well, the American Legion property.
Right.
Water and sewer, access to stores and food, transit, ideal
right.
for Chapel Hill to carve out a part of that for a future mm-hmm. park to help the next
right.
Community that gets threatened.
That's right.
And so we're waiting to see how that might work out. You know, Chapel Hill is not, you know, they kind of, when they heard that we were moving on this Millhouse Road park, they, you know, started wondering if it was the right park and wanting to, you know, slow us down and have a group process. And we basically said, we're moving, you know.
Yeah.
There's no reason for us to slow down. It's not that complicated. But let's look forward.
But let's look you know, at, let's, there's let's, there's going to be subsequent
you're right. We need to have a collaborative yeah. process as we deal with this this phenomenon
just more broadly,
moving forward.
Right.
And so then the question for us is what land is Chapel Hill going to put on the table for discussion? In town, land's expensive.
Yeah.
Right? But they own Legion. So.
Yeah, they do. And we're going to stay tuned. And you're going to come back on the Weekend Water Cooler and tell us what happens next.
Love to.
What happens in the next episode of Mark Rules the World, at least as far as the borders of Orange County go. Thank you, Mark, so much for joining us. It's great to have you with us again.
Yeah, thanks.
And we hope to see you soon with more good news about affordable housing always. Thanks for listening in, and everybody have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.